Bureaus Worldwide, this is FSN.
Yeah, thanks Ollie Barrett. Monday, how you doing? It's Monday's programme. It is the 14th of October 2019. I'm Richie Allen. I'll be opening the Skype line and the phone line to the programme in around about a half an hour's time. I've put the details on Twitter. Raj has put them on Facebook, the Skype contact details and the phone number. I look forward to hearing from you a little bit later on. Obviously, preference given to people who've never been on the programme before. All right, you mind that? You do, you don't. That's okay.
Well, ring out the gimp.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Ah, be Jesus. Lovely. Looking forward to the phone-in then. I'll give you the details then. Hang on a second. Hang on. I'll turn down the music just a wee bit. My Skype name is Chat with Richie. That's all one word. Chat with Richie. On Skype, Chat with Richie. The phone number in the UK is 0161 818 2018, 0161 818 2018, or +44 161 818 2018. Don't call now, because it isn't switched on, and it won't be till the end of the news roundup, the monologue. All right, yeah, good stuff. Right, I'm in good form. It's miserable again. It's raining again outside. I'm looking out the window and it's raining. And it hasn't stopped for 2.5 weeks. Apart from Saturday. We had a good day Saturday. And earlier on it was nice and mild and dry, but it's been, well, it's been very wet. It's been a wet month. Thus far has October. Yeah. The fireworks and the bangers, the rockets, they're around already. We've been hearing them. And our dogs are absolutely petrified. This begins the 8 to 10 week season of, well, scaring the living bejesus out of our animals. Happens every year. Nothing we can do about it except for soothe and comfort our little blighters. That's all we can do. It's shocking. But anyway, look, you get used to it. Phone in then. Couple of films. I went to the Rugby League final on Saturday. I won't mention that again. I just did, but I won't go into any detail about it. But on Friday and yesterday, watched two films with her indoors, and we weren't very impressed with either. The first one, we were greatly looking forward to it. That's El Camino, Breaking Bad, the film about Jesse. Okay? It's like a follow-up to What Happened. I won't tell you what happened at the end of Breaking Bad, because you mightn't have seen it yet. I won't spoil it for you. But anyway, they follow Jesse, and it's just very poor, we thought. We didn't like it. And then yesterday, recovering after a good session on the booze on Saturday, we watched It Chapter 2, just yet another film made about one of Stephen King's books, or an adaptation of one of Stephen King's books that just turns out to be rubbish. Absolute rubbish. How did they get Jessica Chastain and James McAvoy to sign on to that? Well, we know how they got them to sign on to it. They paid them plenty of money, didn't they? That's how it goes. 7 minutes nearly past the hour. 6.5 minutes. First for me today, you're going to be proud of me. This is a genuine first now. Kitchen sink. Kitchen sink. Future Mrs. Allen managed to block up the kitchen sink. I have no idea how she managed to do it. Water wouldn't drain from it. Water would not drain from it. Vexed. Worried. What are we going to do? Now, ordinarily, I would call a handyman or a handy woman. It's usually a handy man. I don't trust women. You don't want a woman turning up. I jest. Usually when you phone somebody, it turns out to be a bloke, right? Now, I've never done anything ever. Never. Never painted. Never wallpapered. I've never put a nail in the wall. Never hung a picture. I'm not exactly a man's man, if you catch my drift. So I took a look at the sink today, full of water, and I said to myself, how fucking hard can it be? Went to the shed, there's a shed, and there were some old tools there, belonging to the previous owner. Spanners. Now for my American listeners, a spanner is a wrench. It's a wrench. Okay, so I got a spanner, or I got a wrench, and I stood in the kitchen and I looked at the sink and I went, this is it. I'm going to do something for the first time in my life. This is true, because I've never done anything. Never did any maintenance, ever. I know I'm overemphasizing this, but it is true. Never even a little bit of maintenance. Spanners, wrenches, I opened the cupboard under the sink and I got to work. Yes! 20 minutes later, scene at my house. Yeah. That's not good. And whenever somebody walks into your kitchen or into your living room and they're a tradesperson, it's like the old Jasper Carrot gag from way back. They do stand there and rub your nose in it by going, huh? What sort of fucking Egypt did this, huh? And you're looking for somewhere to hide your face. Anyway, never again will I be going near the sink. Boris Johnson's government, never again, not even to wash a cup. Boris Johnson's government has set out ambitious policies, apparently. For crime, for health, and for the environment. And he did it during the Queen's speech. They write out their plans for their spending and for their policies. And the Queen comes into Parliament and, well, the Queen, she doesn't go to Parliament, she goes somewhere else, the Palace of Westminster. The Queen then reads out the speech. Okay? Jeremy Corbyn and the other opposition leaders in Parliament have dismissed the plans as an election manifesto. In the speech, we heard about tougher sentences for violent offenders and legal targets for cutting plastic pollution. In fact, 26 bills were mentioned at the state opening of Parliament. But Johnson has no majority, you see. He's about 45 short of a majority, I believe. So many of these bills will never see the light of day. Anyway, do you want to hear the Queen? You do. You don't? Well, just have a listen to the Queen. The emphasis on my government.
My government's priority has always been to secure the United Kingdom's departure from the European Union on the 31st of October. My government intends to work towards a new partnership with the European Union based on free trade and friendly cooperation. My ministers will work to implement new regimes for fisheries, agriculture, and trade, seizing the opportunities that arise from leaving the European Union. An immigration bill ending free movement will lay the foundation for a fair, modern, and global immigration system. My government remains committed to ensuring that resident European citizens who have built their lives in and contributed so much to the United Kingdom have the right to remain.
Well, that's the gist of it, the Queen. And the build-up to the Queen's speech was hilarious on British media. Sky and the BBC, with their own royal correspondents describing the pomp and the circumstance. But nobody does it like Sky and our Ginger Ninja. Doesn't happen very often, but it is box office when Kay Burley gets together with Sky event commentator Alistair Bruce. Or to give him his full title, it's Major General Alistair Andrew Bernard Reeby Bruce of Creonach. What? Major General Alistair Andrew Bernard Reeby Bruce of Creonach. He's the sort of guy that'll send you over the top to your certain effing death while he hangs back with a bottle of Louis Trey's and a Cuban cigar. Yeah, Alistair Bruce. You love those guys, those army officers. Anyway, before we hear Alistair and Kay, Kay Burley tells us how it will unfold. Listen to Kay describing the arrival of the Queen and what's going to happen. She's got a career in kids' television. Well, if the news presenting goes tits up, here's Kay.
Still looking ahead to today's Queen's speech here on Kay Burley at Breakfast. What can we expect? Well, the Queen will enter through the Sovereign's entrance at the base of Victoria Tower. By tradition, this is the only route the Queen is allowed to take when entering Parliament. Once inside, Her Majesty makes her way to the special robing room. And it's here where she usually puts on the Imperial State Crown and the red velvet robe of state, which has an 18-foot train.
An 18-foot train?
For this speech, though, the crown will be carried in front of her. The Queen then makes her way to the...
Sounds like a tour guide, Kay. You can imagine being at the back of a line of 12 or 14 people listening to Kay tell you about Parliament.
The House of Lords behind a pier, carrying the cap of maintenance and...
The cap of maintenance.
And another carrying the sword of state.
The sword of state.
Once the Queen's seated on her throne inside the House of Lords, Black Rod, you remember him, is...
Black Rod.
...is sent to the House of Commons to summon MPs. But to assert the Commons' superiority, the door is slammed shut. Black Rod then knocks three times using the Black Rod, hence the name. You can even spot dents on the Commons' door if you ever visit Parliament.
Jack and Ori, here we come, eh?
The door is then opened and MPs follow Black Rod back to the House of Lords with the Prime Minister and Leader of the Opposition leading the way. And once inside, MPs stand at the opposite end of the Queen's throne to watch the speech.
Fantastic. Fandabby-dozy. Do you think the producer said to Kay, Kay, use your most patronising tone of voice, please, when explaining this rubbish to the plebs? Kay began a new programme. She's on Sky's Breakfast roster now between 7 and 9 every morning. There you are. I'll miss her in the afternoons, Kay. But you know, it's nothing is so funny as when she gets together with the aforementioned Alastair Bruce, Major General Alastair Andrew Bernard Ryby Bruce of Cranach. The guy, the major, the army officer, the guy who'll tell you, go and get killed while I have a brandy and a cigar, right? Brilliant stuff. Anyway, Alistair Bruce and Kay, it is box office stuff, this. This is what you pay your TV licence for.
And with us now to tell...
No, to be fair, you don't. You don't pay them. I think you get Sky News for free, don't you? Do you? Or do you have to pay Sky for Sky News? I'm not too sure. Anyway, here we go.
There's more is our events commentator, Alistair Bruce.
Alistair Bruce!
Who will be leading the procession today, looking...
Leading the procession.
...looking sensational...
He looked like a right fucking Egypt. Now, you have to see the pictures, right?
Not bad, but the sadness is no one's inviting me out to a party afterwards.
Oh, tell me about your...
It really is like an episode of Play School or Jack and Ori, isn't it?
Garb.
It's called state ceremonial dress, and it basically dates back to the 18th century, 19th century. But over it, I'll put what's called a tabard, which comes from the 13th century.
Tabard from the 13th century. This guy is a cure for insomnia.
14th century. And that is what is called a coat of arms, which looks like the whole of the royal coat of arms, the Lions of England, the Lion of Scotland, and the Harp of Ireland.
Oh, Jesus.
Okay. Tell me more.
Well, tell me more. Kay's got nothing to contribute. Tell me more.
Well, I will be at the front of the procession.
We have a lot of time to fill there now. Alistair, tell us a bit more. He's going to be at the front of the procession.
And the Harp of Ireland.
Okay. Tell me more.
Well, I will be at the front of the procession, and that's because my job is just to walk really slowly. I literally did go half a foot, because the Queen is coming at the back.
His job is to walk really slowly at the front. I don't know how he manages.
And processions have this extraordinary way of making the people at the back go faster than at the front. So I set the pace, which the Earl Marshal organised and practised on Friday.
That's answered a question I've been asking for about 25 years. I've never understood that. How do they prevent the people at the back walking quickly? Well, you get the guy at the front to walk slowly. Absolutely brilliant.
Okay. Her Majesty will...
Okay, says Kay.
She will not be wearing her crown?
The Majesty won't be wearing the crown.
We're told that she won't be wearing the crown, but the crown will be carried in procession in front of her. She's once attended Parliament when she was sovereign, but not crowned.
Are you asleep yet? Set your alarm for 10 minutes and we'll be back in the room.
Or just the diadem. Today she'll wear the diadem alone.
The diadem.
Diadem alone. But she'll still wear the robe. She's got four pages of honour, one of whom is a cousin of mine, Robert Bruce.
Good. One of her pages is a cousin of Alistair Bruce's. Mm.
Bruce, good.
Okay, I don't know what's funny about that, to be honest.
Is there a particular reason why she's not wearing the crown?
That's a fucking question and a half. Why is she not wearing the crown?
The crown, I mean, she is in her 94th year,
yeah, and the rest. She's about 130. These fuckers never die, Kay. Anyway, why is she not wearing the crown?
I'll put it this way, with
it's
all the
heavy,
years...
Isn't
it? It is, it's £2 and a bit.
£2 and a bit?
Pounds. With all the experience of her life, she's always been immensely practical. And she probably has taken the view that she might not do it this time. Queen Victoria hardly ever...
Who gives a fuck about Queen Victoria? Back to our Queen.
...came to open Parliament. This Queen has regularly, almost consistently done so. It can be
not
done by
other
people.
Not been here for a little while, though, has she?
No, because we haven't had a different session for some time.
Fantastic.
And when she came to open this, at the very beginning of this Parliament, it was all slightly rushed and in the middle of another challenging ceremonial time, so she came in day dress.
Okay.
Oh, she came in her day dress.
Duke of Edinburgh has previously...
Prince Philip, the Land Rover killer. Prince Philip, the Land Rover killer. The guy who knocks people down and doesn't even pay them the courtesy of visiting them in hospital. Prince Philip, is he going to be there?
I think Charles has been with her once. Who will be with her today?
The Prince of Wales will be with her. Also, the Duchess of Cornwall is coming. And the Prince of Wales will sit beside her on the throne.
So the Prince of Wales will sit beside her, lovely.
He's there really to help her because, you know, going up and down those steps and all that kit is quite interesting. If you watch very...
She's an old fucker. He's there to help her in case she stumbles, right?
If you watch very closely, the Queen has a little knack. She always holds her hand down here.
The Queen has a little knack. She holds her hand down here. And his hand is near his crotch in the video this morning. I thought he was suggesting that to while away the boredom of the whole thing, that the Queen fiddles herself while all of this is going on. But that's not what she does. Apparently she has her hand down there to hang on to her robe just in case one of the page boys steps on it and basically renders the Queen in the nip.
Just holding the edge of the robe. So that if any of the young pages trips, she gets a bit of a prior warning before it pulls her shoulders down.
Is that right? Yeah.
Fantastic. That's it. No more of that for you. Alastair Bruce, Sky's events commentator with Kay Burley, box office stuff on Sky News this AM. It's coming up for 19 and a half minutes past the hour. There's still plenty of interesting things to talk about before I open the phone. More interesting than that nonsense. What have we got next? We have, of course, we'll stay with the Queen's speech. We'll stay with it for a minute. Labour's Jeremy Corbyn, the leader, of course, said the speech was a propaganda exercise. He said the Prime Minister promised that the Queen's speech would dazzle us on closer inspection. It's nothing more than fool's gold. So they laid out the government's plans for crime, for health, etc., etc. But what about Brexit? Because this is a very big week for Brexit, with the European Union summit on Thursday and Friday. Now, Sky News reporter Tom Rayner, speaking to Sky presenter Sarah Jane Mee, spells out what is supposed to happen this week, and this is interesting. Tom Rayner.
Well, the big moment is on Thursday and Friday when EU leaders meet in Brussels for their summit. If there is to be a deal, it won't be negotiated there. That's the line from Brussels negotiators and from senior EU figures. If there is a deal arrived at between Boris Johnson's negotiating team and Michel Barnier's team in the course of the next few days, it will be signed off at that summit. Boris Johnson would then need to bring it back to the House of Commons.
That's why they're sitting on Saturday.
Potentially have a meaningful vote on Saturday. Then there's all sorts of questions about whether even if a meaningful vote were passed, you would have enough time to get the legislation passed, whether you'd need a technical extension beyond the 31st. I mean, let's just focus in on where we are now. At the moment, both Brussels and Number 10 are saying a deal is still possible, but it's going to be extremely difficult, and that there is a major, major stumbling block and gap on customs arrangement in Northern Ireland. And that's not something that can necessarily be brushed over, because anything that Boris Johnson gives, any further he moves towards what Brussels wants, he loses the ability potentially this end, whether it's DUP or hardline Brexiteers, to actually pass it into law. So that is the delicate balance for all the bombast that we've heard today.
Tom Rayner there, speaking about what's going to happen this week. Right, they get a deal done, they rubber stamp it on Friday, if they get a deal done, that is, and they go back to Parliament for a special sitting on Saturday where it will be put to Parliament, that particular deal. 22 minutes past the hour. I missed this over the weekend. I don't know if you missed it. I missed it because it was a mad weekend as far as weekends go. But Alastair Campbell, Tony Blair's communications director and party to genocide. Alastair Campbell, let's be honest, war criminal. Okay, psychopath. These days, Alastair Campbell from Burnley moonlights for GQ magazine. And amazingly, Campbell interviewed Labour's number two, the Shadow Chancellor, John McDonnell. I hear you ask, I wouldn't have thought that McDonnell would have wanted to breathe the same air as Alastair Campbell. But I know different, of course, not because I'm an expert, but I've been telling you identitarians for years. All of you who got very excited when Jeremy Corbyn and John McDonnell took control of the Labour Party, I told you, but you wouldn't listen. Who these guys really are. Alastair Campbell asks John McDonnell, would McDonnell have Campbell back in the Labour Party?
Did you support my expulsion from the party?
No.
Would you have me back?
Yes.
Good. Thanks for that. Right. Let's. Now we're into sort of deeper.
Hang on. Your expulsion was on the basis of ridiculous rules that were brought in under New Labour.
Were they?
Yeah, the automatic expulsion. Yeah, it was stupid.
It was badly
rule.
Applied. It was badly applied.
It was, but it was a stupid rule.
Yeah, anyway,
okay. come back, Alistair. Okay. All is forgiven.
Well, listen, I'm not. They've told me.
Have you applied?
They've told me I've got to go. Basically, I'd have to go to court.
No, I thought you jacked it in.
I jacked it in because basically I would have to go to court. And
just submit a reapplication.
Shall I just send it to you?
No, send it to the party. I haven't got that sort of influence. I'm just a party member. Submit the application.
Yes, yeah.
Do you hear that? That is supposed trade unionist and anti-war campaigner John McDonnell yucking it up in the offices of GQ magazine or somewhere else with the war criminal and the mass murderer, Alistair Campbell.
What kind of fuckery are you?
What have I been telling you for years? I'm going to say this one time and I'm never going to say it again. All of them, at the end of every day, all of them, every Liberal Democrat MP, the two Green Party MPs, if there even is two, the Labour Party MPs and the leaders, and the Conservative Party MPs and the leaders, they all get together at the end of every day in one of these subsidised bars, of which there are half a dozen in Westminster, where they drink cheap as chips beer on your expense. All of these politicians that are supposed to be against one another. Just before the night is out, in comes the Queen and Prince Charles and Prince Philip. And what does the royal family, the Lib Dem MPs, the Labour MPs, the Tory MPs, the Scottish National Party MPs, the Independents, what do they do? What do they sing at the end of every night?
We all stand together.
And they couldn't give a fuck whether you lived or whether you died. Do you understand that? Will you ever get it into your thick skull? Doesn't matter what badge they wear, what rosette. They don't work for you. None of them. What did the snowflakes of Momentum think about John McDonnell giggling away with Alistair Campbell and saying he supports his return to the Labour Party? Well, in these days of identitarianism and narcissism, it's difficult for people to say, shit, I got it wrong. Well, shit, you did get it wrong, son. You did. Let's move on. Let's have an and finally for now before I open the phone. Let me tell you, and I want you to listen carefully, I'm prioritising people who have not phoned the programme before, okay? Because we don't like phone-ins, and I've done phone-ins on commercial radio, big radio stations, smaller radio stations. It's not good for listeners when people try to hog phone-ins. We have an enormous listenership all over the world. Let's hear from people in the first hour of the phone-in whom we've not heard from before, if we can. So I'm looking forward to that. Hey, listen, just before I open the phone and the Skype, do you want to laugh? This made me laugh. I would have liked to have met this bloke, I think. You might have seen this today. Some of the news channels covered this story. In Kilmana in Leinster, there was a funeral late last week. And the mourners at the funeral standing around the open grave, looking down at the casket. So they had just lowered the casket, right? And they're standing around. They couldn't believe their ears when they heard a voice speaking from the coffin. As they looked at the coffin, graveside, they could hear a voice inside it shouting, "Hello, hello, let me out, let me out." You've got to hear this, it's very good.
Hello? 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 Let me out! Where the fuck am I? Hello? Hello? Let me out! The fuck, I'm dying in here! Where the fuck am I? Is that that priest I can hear? That fuck! Let me out! Hello? Hello? Stop, I can hear you! Hello? Hello, please!
Hello?
Who's there?
No.
He's in shame, I'm in the box. No, I'm fucking front of you, I'm dead. You gotta hear that.
Hello again. Hello.
I was called to say goodbye. I'm gonna die, I pray to say. Hello.
And the man who passed away was Jamie Bradley. And before he passed away, he recorded that. He was struggling with an illness for a long time. Recorded that, got him to stick it into the coffin and to activate it when the coffin was basically down in the grave. Great sense of humour. Or Yesh De Gareva on him, even though I didn't know the chap. Good stuff, that. Love people with sense of humour, don't you? Gotta love a bit of that. Right, some Brian Ferry then on the Richie Allen Show, live on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, triggerwarning.tv, TuneIn Radio, and lots of other platforms around the world as well. Going to be taking your Skype calls and your phone calls over the next hour and 20 minutes or thereabouts, however many we get, for this Monday, October 14th, 2019. Great to be with you. Welcome to your Richie Allen Show. Oh yeah! Love is the drug. Back in a couple of minutes. Right, let's give Brian Ferry, let's cut him short just a little bit. Before we go to the caller, the first caller, by the way, let me remind you of the details. I'm going to be with you till just before 7 o'clock UK time, whatever time that is in your part of the world. You can figure it out. So we've got about 90 minutes or just under, really. The phone number, forget the phone number, the Skype handle is Chat with Richie. That's all one word, Chat with Richie. And the phone number is 0161 818 2018, or +44 161 818 2018. It's pinned, or it should be, excuse me, I think it might be pinned to the top of the Twitter page, but I've given it to you anyway. Chat with Richie on Skype. Let's go straight to the phone. Caller, good evening, welcome to the programme. Who am I speaking with?
John.
How are you, John? Welcome to the show, my friend. How are you? Where are you calling from?
I'm all right.
Where are you calling from, John?
I'm from Bolton.
Ah, you're not too far away, my friend. A little bit north, a little bit north of here. Well,
yeah, it's a few minutes away. Just a hop, skip and a jump, really.
A hop, skip and a jump, yeah. And you know, it's one of the places we want to go up and spend a bit of time in. We're going to do all the cities in the northwest. We've not been to Bolton, but I hope we'll get there soon. John, welcome, my friend. You get to set the agenda then. What would you like to talk about?
To be honest, we had a bit of a Twitter exchange a few weeks ago about this, and it's about vaccines in schools. And it's back. I mean, I'm a sort of similar generation to you. I mean, I'm 44, and when I was at school, you had knitting or that would come and have a look at the children's scalps. Right, you've got nits, no, you're okay, and all the rest.
Yeah, knitting or
you'd be lucky if you got sort of hearing tests, sight tests, and that was it. That was it. End of story. Since I've had children, I've got three. I've got a boy who's 12, another boy who's 6, and my youngest is a girl of 4. And I would say the last couple of years, it's really kind of, they've really upped the ante on this. I've never known anything quite like it. And it was a couple of weeks ago, me two youngest came home from primary school, and they both had a pack. And it had a consent form for the flu vaccine, which is a nasal spray. And the other one, it was kind of like a worksheet, like a quiz for kids. And it was called Be a Flu Detective. And they had to work their way through this sheet, and there was like a word search and a few other bits and pieces on it. And I just refused straight away. The kids are healthy, they're fit, they never get ill. They're all right, other than coughs, colds, they're tip-top. They're quite lucky in that respect. So I kind of did away with that pretty much straight away. Then my eldest came on. This is the same day, this. And he came home with a consent form for the HPV vaccine.
Wow.
Oh, and right. This came with the old leaflet, the fact sheet, in inverted commas, and a lot of other stuff. Now, my wife, down the years, has had a few cancer scares. So straight away, she was, he's got to have this. Now, I'd read up on the HPV vaccine, and I was kind of saying, no, we really need to sort of not do this, because he just doesn't really need it. So there was a lot of to-ing and fro-ing. It got quite heated at times. And she'd be then talking to people that she knew, friends and stuff like that. Oh, well, my friend says this and my friend did this. And it was all getting a little bit silly. to the point that we were falling out a little bit. And then she rang the immunisation team. I think it was at Bolton Hospital. And she passed the phone over to me. And the lady that I spoke to said, I believe you've got doubts about this HPV vaccine. I said, yeah, it's the Gardasil, isn't it? And she said, yeah. I said, well, I've got issues first off with what it's made of. And she said, oh, I don't know what it's made from. So the alarm bell started ringing right then.
A woman rings you up to say, oh, I believe you've got doubts about the vaccine, sir. And you say, I do. It's about the ingredients. And she concedes that she doesn't know what they are.
That's absolutely right, yeah.
Holy God.
So I said, well, it's got yeast in it. It's got borax, I think it's called, which is used in laundry, washing powder and stuff. It's got carbohydrates in it. And it's got aluminium hydrophosphate in it.
Yeah.
I said, now, I've got doubts there. I said, I mean, would you just pump something like that into your children? I said, it just doesn't sit well with me. I said, I've also looked into the company that makes it. I said, and they're a firm called Merck. And she said, oh, I had no idea who made it. And I thought, well, we're doing very well here then. So you don't know what it's made of. And you don't know who manufactures it.
But she's recommending it.
Right. She's recommending it. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I said, well, this company that make it, Merck, aren't the most ethical in the world. They seem to have been involved in quite a few scandals. And they're sort of boasting of how much money they're already making from this. I said, so none of this is really sitting well with it. I said, besides, I said, my eldest son doesn't have a cervix, so I'm sort of at a loss, really, as to why it's necessary. And she said, oh, well, if you look at the leaflet, it says that, we're very confident that we expect this to reduce the risk of cancers in boys. I said, well, what are the current figures? And she said, well, we won't get that information for 10 years. And I said, 10 years? I said, so can you give me some kind of indicator then on how successful it's going to be? And she said, well, we just expect it to. I said, well, that's kind of like oil of Yule, isn't it?
Isn't it?
We're going to sort of may reduce the risk of aging. You're saying that this kind of it may reduce the risk in cancers, but we won't know for 10 years. I said, well, on that then, I said, what were the figures then in HPV-related cancers in young males before the rollout? I said, what was the, you know, I said, because if we're talking a few thousand people or a few thousand males out of a population of, what, in terms of males, around about 15, 20 million, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
You could be talking something like 0.03%.
Yeah, you're right, yeah.
So, can you give us some kind of idea of those figures? And she said that she didn't have the information to hand.
Hey, John, sum that up for our listeners. John is on the line from Bolton. This is a very important phone call. John's got three young children. His eldest is a boy of 12, I said, John, or a little bit older, is he?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
12. And John said that John and his wife had a bit of a disagreement. We all have disagreements with our wives. I'm no different than John or anybody else. But about whether the lad needs the HPV, human papillomavirus, injection, which is Gardasil in this country and in the Republic of Ireland. So they're having a bit of a conflab about it. Anyway, health worker, hospital person rings up and says, I'm here to reassure you, I believe you have a few doubts about the vaccine. And John, you're a very mild-mannered fella, John, by the sounds of you. John says, John says, so what's in the vaccine then? And the lady doesn't know. Who makes it, says John. The lady doesn't know. John knows what's in the vaccine. John knows who makes it. And by the way, what are the figures in terms of boys getting these illnesses? And the lady doesn't know, but she's ringing him to tell him it's okay, don't worry, take the vaccine. That's bizarre.
It's extraordinary, Richard. I feel like a drama queen when I say this. But it's almost as if my kids feel like, well, I feel like my kids are under attack. It's, And I'm not paranoid. And when you mention this to people and you discuss it with people, you get labelled an anti-vaxxer. I am by no means an anti-vaxxer. My children, when they were little, they had vaccines when they were born. If I knew now what I knew then, reverse that. I wouldn't. I'd have probably thought twice. But when you had Dr. Robin Kelly on last week, he said something, and I thought that is exactly it. When he said that you're not an anti-vaxxer, you're pro-child, and that's what it is. I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I'm just very, very conscious of stuff being pumped into my kids that I don't know what it is, and I cannot just put blind faith in somebody holding a needle saying, oh, this is all tickety-boo, this is all fine and dandy, and you'll be tip-top, off you go. I just can't do that. That doesn't make me some form of anti-vaxxer that's going to put anyone at risk.
It doesn't.
Me a concerned parent.
It makes you a concerned parent, and look, I would not describe myself as an anti-vaxxer either. I'd be like you. What I believe is that the cases of, how do you describe the illnesses the girls have experienced in Ireland? You know, these awful fatigue, chronic fatigue type illnesses.
Yeah.
I do not believe that these girls are having some sort of psychosomatic trauma or they're the victims of Munchausen by proxy. I don't believe of any of that. I believe there are so many cases, there is something to it. Now, it doesn't mean that everybody who gets the HPV vaccine will get a debilitating a debilitating illness, but it suggests that some do. And what have we got in Ireland? Massive cover-up. The women, the mums have been demonised and ridiculed. And then you speak to a health worker, and you're not the first person to say this to me, and they might be very nice and very jolly, but then they concede that they don't know anything about it. It's insane. It's insane, John.
But it's becoming a fixation. And I was at the hospital with my youngest son this morning. He has to have a minor op next week. It's nothing major. But the first thing that the nurse said when we walked in, the first question was, up to date with the immunisations? And I thought, God almighty, you're absolutely fixated with this.
Fixated, yeah.
And then when we took him to his GP, and this is absolutely true, this, they've actually got flu jab bunting going around the surgery waiting room. And there was a poster a while ago, and I couldn't believe what I was looking at. And it said something along the lines of, hey, kids, make sure your mum is a super mum and that she can have the flu vaccine if she's pregnant. And I said to me, I was with my eldest son then, and I said, God, just look at that. It's kind of almost like the leaning on the little ones now. You know, come on, you make sure that mum gets the vaccine. You make sure, and it sounds completely paranoid, but once you start sort of seeing this, it seems to be everywhere.
I suppose, and you can't argue with children, because we're seeing this Extinction Rebellion thing, and that, of course, do you know what? That is led by, at least it's led by adults, at least the chief executives of it, if I can use that term, they seem to be adults. But the whole thing was driven by children, by young teenagers like Greta and others. So I wonder, is that not some sort of new way of kind of, you know, imposing upon people something that you want them to do, basically get children to do it and use children to do it? I wonder, is that something we're witnessing now in the last little while? I don't know, John.
I would agree totally with that. But what I think there's something, I think, a little bit more insidious with it, because me eldest son, who's at secondary school, when he first started secondary school, we got this information pack that talked about school dinners and how you pay for school dinners. And it said most of the kids pay by fingerprint recognition. And I thought, shh, no way, you know. So we kind of refused that. You know, there's no way we're having biometrics.
What was the reaction to the refusal, John, when you said no?
What was my reasoning?
No. What was when you said you didn't want the children to be using their fingerprints to pay? What was the reaction to that from the school? Was there any blowback?
To be honest, they weren't too bad about it. They were kind of, oh well, you know, it's just that the majority do it that way. Do you have any issue? And I said, well, look, I said, me, the problem that I have with anything like that, because she said that, well, we only keep the data for for 5 years and then it's gone. And I said, nothing ever really goes when it's saved on a computer. You know, if someone's information is on a computer, it doesn't just disappear. I mean, Gary Glitter would tell you that. You know, it doesn't just vanish. It leaves a trace. And in the space of those 5 years, where is that information gone? So I thought, I really can't do that. So well, what he does is he enters a PIN instead. He has a PIN number. He enters a PIN number. And we sort of top up his account as we go. But my own belief, and again, it might come across as completely paranoid, but my belief is that I don't think that they know. I think that they just think it's a nice, easy way for the kids to pay for the dinners. It's no fuss, it's quick and easy. I think that is what they think.
And I agree with you. I think you're absolutely right. But it's important to say that. Not everybody's involved, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but my own personal view is that I think that there's something underneath this, and I think that it's almost a way of kind of conditioning children ready so that they kind of accept that they're watched, and they kind of accept that they're on camera, and they accept that they're filmed 15, 20 times a day, and that everywhere they look, there's a CCTV camera and yeah. There's something scanning them. And it's almost preparing them in a weird kind of way. And it's something that when I hear myself saying it to other parents,
I know you sound, you think you're mad.
I'm a right fruitcake.
Nah, but not the way you're speaking to me. Nobody could imagine you're a fruitcake. It's important that people consider these questions. You know, I think ultimately they're preparing children for a sort of a transhumanist, kind of a post-human society. I really do believe in a few years they'll be asking him to. I mean, we already know that they've got the cerebral implant now, so you can download the internet to your mind. They've got that ready to go. I think they want children. Let me ask you this, John. Stay with me for a few minutes, John, because I don't often get parents of young children and teenagers or pre-teens, nearly teens, as your son is. I don't often get a chance to speak to people like you. John is on the line from Bolton. I will take plenty of calls after, John. Don't worry about that. There's loads and loads of time. We'll come back to Gardasil in a minute. But having the youngsters, and your youngest has just begun school, is that right?
Yes, she's four.
Now, I'm not trying to wind you up or put words in your mouth or anything, but when you hear on, not just on programmes like this, you read the papers, John, you're a smart man, you read the news. When you see the things that they want to introduce into the classroom to very young kids like 5 and 6, when they want them to start thinking about their sexuality, how do you feel about that, knowing that you've got a four-year-old who's about ready to go right into it?
Well, at the moment, because our children are at Catholic schools, they're very, very reticent with that.
Good.
And I'll be honest, I haven't seen a lot. There hasn't been anything regarding sex education or anything like that. They're still pretty much, to a certain degree, the kind of prudes that they were when I were back at school in the 1980s. It's just without the violence.
Well, we've lost John momentarily, have we? Let me see, can we get him back on there? I don't know what happened there. John from Bolton, hugely interesting conversation this. Let me get him back on the line if I can. While we do that, let me just remind you of the phone number to call the programme. It's 0161. Is that no, it's not. I'm going to try and get John back on, so if you bear with me a moment, I'm going to get John back on if I can. Oh, what a pain that is. You wonder sometimes, don't you? Anyway, it's 0161 818 2018. That's the phone number to Skype the programme. The Skype line is Chat with Richie. That's Chat with Richie on Skype. All right. Let me see. All right, I'm struggling here now to get John back on. And that's not good, is it? I'll figure out how to get him back on in a minute. Oh, Jesus. I know it sounds bad, this, doesn't it? Oh, to have a producer standing by to help me out with this. Right. We'll come back to John. We will come back to John. Let's get him back. John, I think you're back.
Yeah, I'm back. Sorry about that.
I was just about to ring you. I was trying to fill there and I was stumbling over my words. I was trying to find the number in the row of numbers. So I'm so glad I don't know what happened. I'm glad you're back. So the kids are going to Catholic schools. So
that's all right.
So as far as the sex education goes, you're not too worried about that at the moment?
Not at this moment in time. I think that the Catholic schools still try and stay clear from a lot of that. I mean, a lot of the governors of those schools do, for the most part, tend to be very, very Catholic. From my own experience, you know, I mean, a lot of them, you know, they want to talk about bringing the catechism back and yeah. things like that. You know, they're so I'd be very surprised if it started to make its way into Catholic schools. But I would imagine for any non-Catholic or sort of independent schools, it's probably going to be open season. But the Catholic schools, I haven't seen anything to be concerned about.
You haven't seen anything to be concerned about. So before I start taking other calls, thanks for coming on, by the way. The 12-year-old...
No, thanks for having me.
No, no, mate, thanks. This is a really important call. This, like I said, we don't get too many parents on with youngsters calling us up. So the 12-year-old, he hasn't had the HPV vaccine. He hasn't had...
No, because, well, the way it was explained to me was that as long as there was one parent that objected, they couldn't have it.
And what does the wife think?
Sorry, say again?
What does your wife think now? You've discussed it since, I imagine.
Well, you see, her view in the end was, you know, I will put my faith in the fact that you're pretty good at reading up on stuff.
Yeah.
So we'll sort of park it for now and maybe have a look at it in 12 months' time. You know, so I kind of compromised on it. But for me, when it gets down to the nitty-gritty, it's just about talking about these things. It's, you know, can we not just have a conversation about something without people being labelled or insulted in some way?
Yeah.
There's a conversation to be had. So for goodness sake, let's just get on with it and have it sensibly.
Absolutely.
And that's it for me.
Absolutely. And your wife, I think you mentioned at the very beginning, your wife has had her own experiences with illness. And understandably... Yeah. You know, she's going to be very scared about cancer and your three children. So how could you not listen to her concerns? Of course, you have to listen to those concerns as well.
You do.
She's well these days, your wife. She's in remission, John. She's well, is she?
Oh, yeah. Funnily enough, it was following a smear and she had to have a few cells removed. She had to have a loop excursion. But, you know, she hasn't had any cancer as such. It was just cancerous cells that needed to be removed. But it does leave her a little bit twitchy,
yeah,
especially when somebody says the C word, innit? It can be a trigger for a lot of people.
You can be sure of it because every single one of us has got granddads, grandmums, uncles and aunts who've died because of cancer. And we know it's not pleasant. Mate, that was a really important call, that. Thanks so much for sharing that information.
No, thanks for listening.
Not at all, and I'm sure we'll bump into one another, John, in the Northwest.
Thanks a lot, Richie.
Cheers, mate.
That. Thank you.
You too, buddy. Bye for now, and all the best to your family. That was John on the line from Bolton there. Yes, very interested in this, aren't we? This particular subject. So he gets a phone call, does John, eh? To say, listen, we'll have a chat about vaccines. We hear you're a bit dubious about them. Yes, says John. What are the ingredients? And the health worker doesn't know. Who makes it? The health worker doesn't know. It's Merck. And what sort of percentage of boys are coming down with cancers? We don't know, says the health worker, but take the vaccine anyway. And I'm not knocking the health worker. These people are only doing their job. Now, I've got on the line, not far from Delhi, a lady who called me on the very first ever phone-in show that I did back in 2014. It's got to be a couple of years since we heard from her. It's my old pal, Himanshi, in India. Himanshi, welcome back.
Hi, Richie. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm doing well as well.
That's great to hear from you now. And I was thinking of you recently because your schooling came to an end, didn't it, last year? You're finished with your studies in your third level. It's all done.
Yes, I'm in the second year of my college right now.
Oh, so you are in second year of college. How is that going?
It's going pretty well. So I took up English literature. Like in English literature, we study things which are relatable. Like in one of your episodes, few months back, you mentioned about Edgar Allan Poe,
yeah.
And I tweeted to you that one of his short stories is in my syllabus. So you see, like the aspects of literature are everywhere. So I'm able to connect. And most importantly, literature helps you to reflect. It helps you to pause and reflect back on the society. And it is relatable, that's all. Various concepts are there, which I have talked about on your show. So that's the thing. It is relatable and it is also interesting.
Very interesting. If I remember, you were introduced to the books and the videos of David Icke by your brother, Dipanchu, is that right?
Right.
He got you into it because he's a little bit older. And you were very young when you started reading David Icke's books.
Yes, I was 15.
Yes, that is young, isn't it, to be reading heavy material like that, because it is pretty heavy. You know, it's important, but it's heavy, right? And, wow. And I know you've always been an advocate to try and get David Icke to India. I know that.
Yes, we are still trying. I guess Dipanshu tried to contact Jamie once. He posted last year that David will be coming to India this year, but talks are still going on, I guess, and we'll have to decide the venue soon, because I'm not sure David is currently touring in other countries right now or not. But since he hasn't been to India yet, so we need to plan a lot. So
absolutely,
I guess that will take some time.
Let me ask you this. This is, having you on the phone is really interesting, because I'm obviously in England, and because it's a much smaller world today, you're not really that far away anymore. I mean, at one time, it would have taken days to reach you. But it is an exotic and a very different and a very mysterious place to me, India. So when we talk about vaccines and we talk about health and we talk about the agenda, do you see that same agenda happening in India that we see here in England?
Yes, I believe that the vaccine agenda or anything that is related to health or anything like that, that is not constrained to any particular country, but that is happening worldwide. And obviously, as I've said before, it is because of the people who want us to constantly degrade our health. David says that problem, reaction, solution. First, they will create their own problems. All the problems are created by them. Then they will give their own reactions, then they will give their own solutions. So that's the thing. They themselves, the government, the elites, they themselves try to harm us. Although they themselves do not consume these stuff, they do not use these kind of stuffs. So, but still, to mind control the population, to take away, I would say, basic sense from them. Like they feed us fluoride in our toothpaste, and certain other things we don't know. And the people are also blind. They know that it is happening, they still will go and consume all those stuff. They know that is harmful for them. They still know that all the product that are made by them, they come directly from the factory. And we don't know what is contained in them, and still they use and consume that stuff. Uh-huh. And I tried, not only me, but the other people who are vegan, we try to warn them. Like one of my classmates, I told her that I haven't eaten anything from McDonald's or KFC for the last, I guess, 5 years. So because the stuff that is made by them is produced in the factory.
It's crap.
So
you're in your second year in college, and you're English literature, and you're speaking with other students. I mean, you said something very powerful there. You said they want us to degrade our health. They want us to make ourselves sick.
That is their main agenda only.
Consuming their products.
Right. They want the people to be to not care about the stuff which is really important, and the lifestyle which we have right now, like just working and not taking proper rest. that has deliberately made us the way we live today. We require, due to the work that the kind of work we do, it has become a necessity in our lives to consume junk food, since people don't have the time to eat the food which is made at home.
When I first spoke to you some years ago, I mentioned Monsanto. And of course, India is a country, everybody should know about India because of what Monsanto did to India with something called BT cotton. And that was Monsanto's own cotton seed, if, for want of a better word. And it Monsanto make Terminator seeds that you can't sow. And, you know, to reseed and reseed and reseed.
And genetically modified seeds.
Modified seeds, that's right. And it caused massive poverty to farmers, didn't it, in India? And many farmers committed suicide.
Dipanshu would be able to give more details on this. I don't have much idea. I have a vague idea.
Oh yeah, we don't have to go into that. No, it's just something that we talked about years ago. Yeah.
I would have handed over the phone to him, but he's not at home right now. So he would have explained very
not at all. So Himanshi, tell me this: there's a bit of a community then, is there? I mean, you're near New Delhi, obviously a major city. Is there a community of people who are looking at David Icke, are looking at Jordan Maxwell, are looking at other sources of news? Do you think there's a growing community there?
I have, like in person, I have not met many people who are into the work of David Icke or follow any kind of this conspiracy stuff, if you would like to call it. But I have met many people who have contacted me through your show and who are based in India only. Like 2-3 people, they reached out to me and they said that they have listened to your show and they have heard me. And they also want David to come to India. So that's the thing. Like, in person, I don't usually meet such kind of people.
It's a strange time we're living in now, because you notice this because you use social media as well, Twitter. We're seeing people being banned a lot now and having their accounts deleted because they're asking questions about health or wars or whatever. We're seeing that happen a lot, right?
And one thing I recently read on social media only, that if people project to be so supportive of each other on social media, why don't we meet such kind of people in real life? Yeah, and that is very true.
Very
that
important.
Very true. Because on social media, people don't really project who they are. They just pretend to be some other person. And that is very true.
This is part of the agenda, isn't it? To make us disconnect from each other physically. Because in the old days, we would have gone to a town hall, or we would have had a meeting, or we would have gone to the pub or the restaurant. We would have done things socially. But I'm guessing, let me ask you this question before I take some more calls, Himanshi. I'm delighted that you phoned in today. Let me ask you this question. I would have thought that in India, of all places, people were still more connected, that people spoke to one another more and they interacted with one another as neighbours in communities more than we do here in England.
That is true. I have a paper called Popular Literature, Popular Fiction in my course. And I was today reading a book, Funny Boy. And in that book only, you see how in India and how in Sri Lanka, previously, like in the 90s and early 2000, people were connected, like we used to have joint families and many, many people used to live together and we were all connected. But since the agenda of following the crowd and searching jobs abroad and all that came up, people now live in nuclear families And it is true, like, if I give my own example, when I was not born, my brother used to live in a joint family with my grandmother and all the uncles, and my parents also used to live with them. But since, you know, development starting taking place, if and that's the irony, people call it development, but it's totally the opposite.
It's a backward step.
Right.
It's a backward step. Yeah, I noticed that in Spain. You know, people in Spain, they have the grandparents are the head of the family. They respect the grandparents. They listen to their wisdom. And yeah, we're losing that. I'm getting a lot of calls coming in, Imanj. So I'm going to take some more calls. I'm really thrilled to speak to you again today there in India. Thanks so much for calling in today.
And one more thing, like the last thing I would like to point out, I was telling you about one of my classmates. So when I told her that I haven't eaten from McDonald's or KFC or the mainstream outlets in the last 5 years, she told me that how can you survive without them? And I said, why do you eat all this stuff? Do you know what are all the ingredients they put into that? And she like explicitly told me that she eats them just because of the taste. She doesn't care what all ingredients are put into that stuff. She just eats them for the taste.
Isn't that incredible? Doesn't know. But you know, I've been guilty of that my entire life, eating something without realizing where it came from. But obviously not anymore. Do me a favor, Himanshi. Say hi to Dipanshu for us, your brother.
He's here now. He's right here.
So he can hear me. Hi, Dipanshu. How you doing? Is he there? Say a quick hello before I move on. Anyway, Himanshi, say hello for me. And I look forward to catching up with you again. Ah, there he is. How you doing, Dipanshu? How are you?
It's been a very long time.
It's been a very long time.
I'm good, yeah. How are you?
I'm great. It's lovely to hear from you and Himanshi there. How is life treating you there?
It's quite fine here. So I don't know what made her make a call today to you. So what was the context talking about?
I'm thrilled. Well, we were talking about her English literature studies in her second year and Edgar Allan Poe and how reading those books, you know, how you can see into the agenda even by reading those old books. And then we got into talking about health and food in India and the agenda. So we've covered quite a bit there. And of course, you introduced your sister to the books of David Icke.
Yes. It was in, I think, 2002 or 2010 or 11 where I first introduced her to the...
2015.
Was that right? Because that's about the time we spoke, because this show began in September 2014. And not long after that, I did a phone-in. And you guys were one of the first people to... I couldn't believe it. You were one of the first callers. And it was an amazing thing because it made the world so small. Sitting in a little studio in Manchester and all of a sudden I've got Dipanshu and Himanshi on the line. Amazing, you know,
because of the great work that David has been doing for such a long time.
That's right, that's what connected us all.
It's consistency towards work and it's dedication towards whatever he does. He does at his best. And that is the reason that his information has reached to people like us who would have not even thought about getting this kind of information all across the world.
Well, I remember
huge thanks to him, a big thanks to him for that, because without him, it wouldn't have been possible.
When we had that phone call back then, 4 or 5 years ago, he was incredibly emotional because he was at home on the Isle of Wight. And you guys were speaking to me. We must have spoke for about a half an hour, 35 minutes. I mean, we had a great conversation. And at the end of it, he phoned me from the Isle of Wight and he was very emotional. He was really touched.
Oh.
You know, at that time, yeah.
Really?
You need to get him to India. You need to start a campaign. Get on to Jamie and Gareth and get him to India. But listen, I'm going to take some more calls to Panchu. Thanks so much, mate, for saying hello to us today and to Manchi. And I know we'll speak again in the future, I have no doubt. I have no doubt at all.
Yes, of course. Yeah, of course. We'll definitely talk about a bit more some great information he's been putting about, and definitely we'll hang on for the next time.
Absolutely right. Good luck. Godspeed to you and Himanshi. Look after yourselves there. Love to hear from you again. Thanks for that. That was the lovely Himanshi and Dipanshu, brother and sister, who live just outside New Delhi in India. I've not heard from them for about 2 years. And the very first phone-in I did, as I've just said, I won't repeat it, they came on the line effectively and talked to us about this information and reading David Icke's books and then reading other authors and following independent content creators and all of that is amazing stuff. 10 minutes past the hour. You are with the Richie Allen Show. It is live, of course, from Salford and Greater Manchester, live on Fab Radio 2. So it is. It's on TuneIn Radio, the TuneIn app. Trigger warning, it's on lots of different bloody things as well, of course. I think Paddy O'Hare might be on the line. How you doing, Paddy?
Hi, Richie. How are you doing?
I'm very well, mate. Nice to hear from you. How are things?
Not too bad. Pretty good. Pretty good, thanks, yeah.
You're busy with the music and the events and all the rest. So Paddy's a musician, by the way. It's been a long time since I heard from Paddy as well on this programme. Well, I'm putting you on the spot, mate.
A man of many hats.
A man of many hats. A man of many disguises. So what are you... I mean, we're talking about, obviously, been talking about health and Brexit and all of these things we talk about. What do you want to talk about? Throw it out there.
Well, I'll just touch slightly on what John was talking about, because I know we've talked about the stuff with vaccines previously when I phoned in. But it's just a little note on that. I think I mentioned last time that I'd withdrawn consent for MMR and for my daughter.
How old was she at the time, Paddy? Remind us.
Would she have been about two at that time?
Yeah, because it's about 2 years since we spoke on this programme. I mean, I see you on Twitter, of course. But it's been about 2 years since you've been on again. It's an amazing day, the real synchronicity here. So she was, so they were recommending that and you didn't want her to have it.
That's right. They wanted to do, it was about seven at the same time. It was like it was the, the meningitis ones that one, but I withdrew consent for that one. Now, there's not been anything really following up on that so far, but she went to preschool this year because she's three now, and you have to fill out everything that they've had on the forms to get them into the school, which I found quite interesting. But then, and they've not said anything, but then it was like last week or something, there was a note in her bag, which actually didn't come from the school, it came from NHS Manchester, just recommending that she get flu jab and the MMR jab. I just thought that was quite interesting.
That's interesting, because so she goes to preschool, they want to know what vaccination she's had, they find out she's not had MMR, and you're thinking I might get a bit of resistance here, they might insist on it. Well, you know, the health secretary is looking into the legal implications of mandating it for children. Not to put you on the spot, Paddy, you know, because I know your better half is not here to join in on this. But if they if they said, look, your beautiful daughter has to have it or no school, what would you do?
I don't know. It seems that's the way it's going, but it's...
You're very honest.
You should be given the choice. I mean, it's not to say that some of them... I mean, like the last guy said, I'm not an anti-vaxxer, but I'm pro for the health of my child. So it's a very difficult position to be put into, because you get pressure from everywhere, you know. But that one certainly was a no-no for me. It was just, you know, with the connection to certain conditions and stuff like that, the MMR obviously has come out a lot.
We got measles, Paddy, when we were youngsters. We got measles.
Yeah.
We did. We all got it.
It wasn't fun, but we had it.
It wasn't fun, no, but our parents ensured that we got it by rubbing us up against children who did have it. And then we got it. And it is true that the older school doctors, even talking to Robin Kelly the other day, the doctor based in New Zealand, and he said, the idea is you get it and your body fights it off and it strengthens your body. But I remember speaking to you about that, 7-in-1. And again...
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
There is too many. Like you say, like we've said before, you know, it has increased too much and there's too many, and giving them all at the same time, I mean, I don't know why that is. Why you can't, if you are going to do it, why they can't be on a sort of spaced out routine where the body gets time to recover from it and stuff like that.
It's also the odds as well. Surely doctors and biologists, previously, I suppose, going back years, they would have played the odds. You know, they would have said, well, the chances of somebody getting a serious injury from measles are fairly astronomical. Therefore, we don't worry too much about it. It's like John was talking about HPV for boys. Boys are not, you're more likely to get hit by a fallen piano than you are to get that virus. Now, we all get that virus. Apparently, we all get HPV, or most of us have the virus for a little while at some time during our adult life. That's the way it is, right? And the more sexually active you are, the more likely you are to rub up against the virus, but it's not going to do you any harm. It's not going to do you harm unless you're very, 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 very unlucky, and yet they want everybody to have it. And that's where you start to get suspicious.
Yeah, I mean, and it's getting to the point where they're going to, where there's going to be a vaccination for every condition, probably. I don't know. I mean, like I say, I just wanted to touch on that, but there was something else I wanted to bring up to you, because I'm not sure whether you've heard about this or whether any of your listeners have mentioned it in the past, in connection with 5G.
Go on, we're all ears when it comes to 5G, Paddy, right now. Go on. By the way, just before you say what you're going to say, further to John Kitson and his colleagues in Totnes in Devon, Totnes Council to put a moratorium on 5G. The government has been writing to councils across the country this week, today, to tell them no more moratoriums. 5G has got to go ahead. Go ahead, Paddy. What were you
going to
say?
Really?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't know that. Oh, my God. What it was, and I can't remember who told me initially, but I was told that, because I'm with Virgin for my internet and, the TV and all that package. And I was told by somebody that your router is automatically opted in to 5G, which I'm not sure whether that means that your hub will then become a booster for other people's 5G signal when it comes in. I don't know. But I was told that you can opt out. Now, I phoned them up. This was quite a while ago now. I think this was back in January. But I phoned them up and spoke to somebody. No, actually, it was one of the live chat things I did. And they took me through a process where you get into the, I'm sure you've done it before yourself, where you have to get into inside the hub settings via a link that you're given.
Yeah, I've done that, yeah.
Yeah. So they'll take you into that, and you can opt out of the 5 gigahertz signal. There's a choice between like the 2.4 gigahertz and the 5 gigahertz. Now it's set to receive both automatically, but unless you go into the settings via this method, you can't opt out.
You can't opt out of it. Wow, how interesting is that? And I've been looking around Salford for any evidence that the transmitters are being placed on lamp posts, and I haven't seen any evidence yet of that happening. Now, there are a couple of LED lights just outside our house, and I've never been a tough guy, and I've never been a tough talker, but I'm telling you, Paddy, nobody's putting one of those transmitters on that lamppost. Nobody.
No, I agree.
It's not happening.
And I wonder whether there's the other thing as well, this with them pulling down trees and stuff like that. I mean, I've not noticed any evidence of that yet here in Saddleworth, but my neighbour did tell me something interesting, is that if you've got trees over a certain height on your property, and one of those trees comes over, whether it be in the window or whatever, then insurance companies are no longer covering trees over a certain height. So I just wonder whether they're pulling themselves into this.
Hang on a second. So she suspects then that insurance companies making this decision not to insure damage caused by trees over a certain height might be segueing into this 5G agenda, because they want people to keep their trees down.
I wondered whether it was or not. It isn't, but I thought that's interesting as well.
Yeah, because what we understand, what we've learned about 5G is it doesn't do well with vegetation in front of it. It's got to have a clear look at the buildings or the houses. These are mad times, Paddy, you know.
I mean, they really are. It's truly terrifying.
It is, because it's like councils are doing stuff without any sort of human health impact study whatsoever. We'll just do it. To hell with it. Because we've got some loose industry material saying that it's fine, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
You know, or the industry standard body, which is actually funded by the industry. The name escapes me, it'll come to me in a minute. And they say, oh no, these guys say it's fine. Yeah, but those guys have got a vested interest in saying it's fine, so I don't know.
But it's the same everywhere in government with these swinging door policies between, you know, people who are in like Goldman Sachs, and then they're not in Goldman Sachs, and then they're in the government and in and out. It's the same all over the world. It's
a joke. It's a cesspool. We've had Natalie on to say it isn't difficult to log into your router and turn off 5G. She's endorsing what Paddy said. And then she says the 5G from, in capital letters, from your router is just that. Unless it is a specific model, it's not a 5G Wi-Fi receiver, says Natalie.
Okay.
So she's from the Hayden Hewitt school of what's the word I'm looking for here? Of
tech.
Nerdiness.
Yeah.
She's a nerd. She's not a nerd, no. But yeah, they know more about this stuff than I do, so I don't know, mate. Paddy, wow. I mean, the vaccine stuff, good luck with, you know, with your daughter and all of that. I mean, if we hope to have children, we will, you know, one way or another, we will. If I have to tire to the bed for a month, we'll have children. But, you know, I dread this stuff, Paddy. I dread it. Nobody should dread stuff. But I look at parents, and I look at parents getting harassed, and look, maybe I shouldn't say harassed, but phone calls and letters, and I'd be very, very jumpy. I really would, you know.
It does make you jumpy. It's, well, you don't know where you like it until you have a kid, and then it's just, you worry about everything.
Jesus. Are you still gigging away, my friend? You're still playing, you are, with the band?
Yeah, still gigging away. I'm still doing a little bit of podcasting as well, making websites as well and doing all kinds of bits and pieces. So
tweet us the link to the podcast, will you? I'm never on Twitter. It's always my pal that does the Twitter stuff during the day. Send me a link to the podcast stuff, and I'll not that it's any good getting a retweet from me. It isn't, but I'll retweet it anyway.
Oh, you did give me a retweet actually for clubstarlove.com. You did give me a retweet for that, so very kind.
No,
of you.
I'm delighted, mate. Listen, it's been great to catch up with you, Paddy.
And you.
If you're down Salford way, my friend, let me know and we'll have a cup or something stronger.
Lovely. All right, will do.
Thanks, Paddy. Lovely to hear from you.
Take
care, Rich. Bye for now. Paddy is a broadcaster, a musician. I got to know Paddy through Fab Radio. I've not heard from Paddy for yonks. It's one of those days, isn't it? Welcome to the Richie Allen Show if you're just tuning in. It's exactly 22 minutes past the hour. It is Monday, October 14th, 2019. My name is Richie Allen. There is plenty of time. If you'd like to phone the programme, Natalie is a geek or a nerd, she confirms, because she works in it. She's a bit of a rock chick as well, Natalie. She's had her own band. So she has. I mean, incredibly striking photographs, I do remember, on Facebook. When I used to be on Facebook. Of course, I'm not anymore. I deleted Facebook a long time ago. Let's go back to the phones. Caller, welcome to the programme. Who are you and where are you calling from?
Richie Allen, I guess. I've never done this before, but I'm guessing he's talking to me. So it's Donny, and I'm calling from Brighton, mate.
Is it Danny in Brighton?
Donny, mate.
Donny, oh, Donny, you know? With an O. Hey, yeah. Donny in Brighton. Lovely to have you on the programme, Donny. You're very
Thank
welcome.
You, I'm glad to be calling, mate. Long-time listener, subscriber. What am I talking about? Also donated since it's People's Voice, mate. So
thanks, Donny.
Well, usually I listen on Podomatic, but yeah, I felt like I had to call for once, mate.
Nice to be listening live for a change. Well, listen, I'm thrilled that you're on in Brighton. What would you like to talk about? You can talk about anything, whether vaccines, whatever we've been talking about, or you can introduce something new. Go ahead.
For me, Richie, everything just ties back to the banking system, so it doesn't seem to matter what the hell the topic is. It always comes back to the control system. So if you don't mind, I'll do a brief synopsis of how screwed it is in this country and then maybe go from there, if you don't mind.
Not at all, Donny. Over to you, my friend. I won't interrupt you. Go ahead.
All right. Well, what I want to say, and what a way I like to put it to people, because it's hard to wake them up when it comes to the banking structure. I mean, basically, people don't give a monkey's chuff, do they? It doesn't matter how you put it. But one of the ways I like to put it for this country is, because most people know it's a private banking structure. So the way I try, and you'll be glad to hear succinctly, I hope, put it, is You know, it's a private banking structure. To boil it down to this country, that's a £2 trillion plus debt. To who? To a private institution, right? So what I'd like to then point out is that people can maybe get a better grasp of this and hopefully get a bit bloody annoyed about it because it's a joke, is the fact that this private institution, we owe them money. The government, I hate that word, we, it really bugs me, Richie, but we always say it, don't we? We owe them money.
Yeah.
Anyway, the government owes these pricks money, plus interest. But this money, well, it's credit, really, without getting into the history of money. This credit was created out of nothing, and then they attach interest to it. And we pay through our taxes and our blood, sweat, and tears to pay back the interest on this debt, which apparently is £1 billion a week, just to service the interest alone. Now, the thing that I like to point out that hopefully riles people up a bit, especially people that still wave flags as a royalist, you know, look at whose picture's on the money. You know,
yeah.
He's right there on the fucking money, isn't she? Sorry, Richie, I was just trying not to swear. I know you don't mind too much.
Not at all, Donnie, don't worry about it. Go ahead.
A picture's on the money, Richie, you know, it's a joke, isn't it? So basically, she either owns or is complicit in this private business that creates the stuff out of nothing, yet we pay for our blood, sweat, and tears taxes to pay back the interest on the debt for something that was created out of nothing that quite possibly she owned the fucking thing in the first place.
And it makes her, Donnie, it makes her either one of or the biggest landowners on planet Earth.
Well, that's what I've heard. I've never researched too much to really research all the time, isn't it? But I've heard she owns 9/10 of the planet. Yet we've got to pay 40 million quid for her wedding out of our blood, sweat and tears when she probably owns the institution, the Bank of England. You know, it's a private business, right? A private corporation. It has shareholders with names and addresses. You know, we get to hear the names, the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, etc. But we never really have a conversation about how the machinations work. And the machinations are, they own the bloody whole thing. She's lock, stock, and two smoking barrels. They own the lot, yet we work our rocks off and barely talk about it other than, yeah, it's a private business. But that's the reality of it. We're all working round the clock through increasingly shitter jobs, through increasingly hyperinflated money system, so it buys less and less, the purchasing power is less and less, yet these arseholes, who are quite blatantly paedophiles as well, get to bring out, I don't watch the TV anymore, so thank God you at least have a connection to it for me, Richie, but these arseholes get to come out and talk about mental health issues, so down the track we can all take some drugs that...
Does it drive you bloody mad on the rare occasion when you watch a bit of telly? Because I'm sure you get a little bit of news, and you will hear a politician.
No, you're my news, Ricky. So go on.
Well, you know, you'll hear sometimes a politician being challenged about their plans, and you'll have a presenter shouting at them. But you're just going to borrow, aren't you? You're just going to borrow. And
it's insane, mate.
And you just wish to Jesus that people at home would go, borrow from who?
I mean, this is just a hopefully succinct microcosmic example of just our own country. You've got the world, I mean, I've heard figures up to $250 trillion in debt. And again, Richard, that same question. To who? Why the fuck aren't people asking this question? It's really insane. It literally baffles me. I know that we get all the Hertz frequencies on the TV, and maybe we're all being mind controlled to some extent. Wouldn't surprise me. What is hypnotism other than look here, don't look here? But at the same time, yeah, fuck me, it drives me insane, Richie, because it's such a blatant scam. But in everyone's defense, and in ours also, because Richie, I believe 9/11 when it happened, mate, you ain't the only one. You know, I was in the military. So I ain't picking on people here. I fell for it to the extent that I thought I was fighting for the Queen. You know, I spent 10 years in Iraq doing the private stuff, mostly in the dark as to how things work up until about 8 years ago. So, it drives me insane. But at the same time, I feel sorry for people because they watch the bloody TV. And as Ikey says, the power of the microphone, right? I honestly don't believe that people are buying it to the extent the TV insinuates that they are, but... Yeah.
But so they feel...
It drives me bloody insane, mate.
They feel helpless, people. I agree with you. I think far more people have an innate feeling that something is dreadfully, dreadfully wrong.
It's, oh, absolutely.
Don't they,
yeah,
Donnie?
Yeah.
They do. Can I ask you this? You don't have to get into this if you don't want to. It's none of my business. But the military stuff. You said... So you're in the army. You came out. You went into the private defence sector, did you? And then you ended up back in Iraq. What sort of stuff were you doing, and what sort of stuff did you see, or do you not want to go there? It doesn't matter.
No, it's I don't want to be like a war story guy, but I think I know I'll put it this way. I mean, I'm not one of these guys that says, pull up a sandbag, listen to my war stories, aren't I tough? But I know what you mean. What I saw there, bearing in mind I was there in 2004, and I don't think I started waking up till about 2011, so I was just in that egoic zone of staying alive, etc.
Yeah.
But yeah, the things that appeared to be apparent before someone gave me the movie Zeitgeist was, what, Halliburton's owned by Dick Cheney? What the hell's going on here? You know, how come this reconstruction, which was bollocks, I mean, I was involved in it was just basically the taxpayers paying giant corporations like Halliburton to do a in inverted commas, reconstruction effort where, you know, you've got the clients on the ground, never mind us, we were paid what we thought was a shit hot wage, like 300 a day. But the GE clients, they were on like $1,500 plus overtime, you know? So it was like the head's getting scratching and that at the time. And then you watch that. And then it was like, I realize I'm in the belly of the beast, if you like, while I'm trying to wake up about the nature of reality and all that other stuff. So,
hey, Donnie, hang on a second. Hang on just 1 second before you continue, because what you've said there is important. And some of the listeners won't know this because we're 19 or 18 years behind September the 11th. What Donnie just said there is a very powerful thing. The United States was allegedly attacked on September the 11th, 2001, by Al-Qaeda. It wasn't. It's a nonsense. But anyway, then they invaded Iraq, which had nothing to do with September the 11th, and it flattened large areas of the country. And what Donnie just said is very profound. The then vice president of the United States was a man called Dick Cheney. And he basically owned a company called Halliburton. And Halliburton was given billions of dollars, wait for it, in no-bid contracts, meaning no other company was allowed to compete for those contracts. All the money was given to Halliburton to go in to Iraq to rebuild what they'd blown to pieces. And Donnie has just told you that it was a load of bollocks.
Well, it kind of reminds me, as you were finishing, then, of the John Perkins book. You know, it's just, it's a hide into nothing, ain't it? You know, it's the taxpayers basically, well, they foot the bill at the end of the day. However the central banks conjure money out of thin air, which is all they do, it's just a conjuring trick, whether that's the bond market or QE or recapitalization. They've got a bunch of different names for it, ain't they? But at the end of the day, after it's produced out of nothing, it gets tagged onto the national debt. So it's the same scam, really. Impossible to repay credit, because it ain't even money, really, is it? But yeah, it's the same scam.
How were you affected by... Look, I'm not Dr. Phil here. I don't try to be Dr. Phil. But
you are bald, though, Richie.
But yeah, I am bald. Yeah, I've just got to get the moustache, no, don't I? I've got to get the tash. No, I've got to get the tash. If I get the tash, I could probably pass for Dr. Phil.
Oh, I don't know about that tash, mate. No,
I need to put a bit of weight on.
But go on, dude.
Tell me about coming back from... I mean, you'd have seen things, Donnie. Look, I'm not trying to... Again, I'm not trying to be a psychotherapist, because I'm not, but you'd have seen some bad shit over there. Right.
I guess so, mate. But, you know, like I said, I didn't start waking up to 2011. And in absolute honesty, I hope you can hear the sincerity, I was all ego before about then, you know. And then I went and drank ayahuasca and et cetera, et cetera, and started waking up. So, yeah, it was like, I'll tell you how it sounded, Baghdad, back in the day from 04. And this ain't a lie. If you ever play Grand Theft Auto when you're being chased and you're on 5 stars, that's how it sounded, you know. It was it really genuinely was. But prior to 2011, mate, I was all ego. Prior to drinking ayahuasca, I was all ego. I didn't even know there was a difference, mate, between the two. So yeah, I'd have seen some shit, and it affected me in the end once I started waking up. But once I was all ego, it was just like, yeah, knuckle down, grit your teeth, get out the gate again, you know.
So before the Iraq war, I remember playing video games on the N64 and on the first PlayStation. This is before the Iraq war, and a lot of those games were first person shooter games, so you had Operation, you had Medal of Honor and stuff like that, which I would have played. And this is really spooky for me. Your experience felt almost like you were in a video game.
Not quite, perhaps. Otherwise, that would have resonated with me. You know, I've never been a video game player, though, so
right, okay.
Maybe that's the reason that it doesn't connect so much, you know? I might have played Tiger Woods or like golf when I was a kid, but never been into the video games in that sense. But I guess it could be. It wouldn't surprise me. Well, certainly wouldn't surprise me, and it's crossed my mind before, these drone bomber pilots that sit thousands of miles away in this some room bombing women and kids. got to seem like a video game to them. Otherwise, how'd you go and help your kid when you take
them
out
of school, yeah. But even the way you did, even the way you described running around and it being kind of Grand Theft Auto, that just really struck a chord with me about kids playing video games and getting used to this kind of stuff. You know, I don't know whether there's anything... Your description of the global financial system, I've never heard anybody put it as well, by the way. I mean that.
Well, I'd like to go deeper if you could, Rich.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
For a long time, mate. And I think there's a lot of points missed from even the best commentators. And believe me, I've had to learn from the best commentators. But they always seem to stop short at the country level. And that bugs the crap out of me, you know, because the fact is it's a ruling cabal, as David Icke calls it, the death cult. But how they do it is through the banking system. But what people seem to stop short of, it's like, oh, yeah, we understand that the bank in our own country, say the Federal Reserve, oh, it's privately owned. But then you'll get even the best guys. I don't want to name drop, but you can imagine the trends or whatever. It doesn't matter who. But they always say, oh, yeah, China are doing this and the US trying to trade talks. It's just a narrative. And they deliberately put this narrative up. They own the central bank in China, and they own the central bank in America, and they own the central bank in England, and I could go on. But the commentators still act like there's a difference. And there's no fucking difference.
No whatsoever.
No. Ever at that level. There are no borders, there are no countries to them. There are no religions to them. It's just them moving their pieces around on a chessboard. And the best analogy I've come up with is it's more like a Monopoly board, and it's bigger, and it's round, and they own everything. On the outside. I mean, everything. The banks, the corporations, the government.
Here's a question, Donnie. Who are we talking... Look, forget about names. Are we talking about a very, very tiny group of people? Are we talking about a tiny group of people? Are we talking about a dozen people?
It seems that way, mate. I mean, you can only go from the best to learn from. And on that front, it's David Icke or G. Edward Griffin or whoever.
Yeah.
But yeah, it seems that way, doesn't it? It really is tiny, but they own the media. They own the government, so what they get to do is propagate whatever bloody narrative they wish through the media, whilst everyone then gets wrapped up talking about it. Well, there is this US-China trade talk, bollocks. I mean, every day there's a fresh, stupid headline. It's going well, it's bad, it's on, it's off.
Rubbish.
Nothing's happening. For me, it's just a bunch of photo shoots with a bunch of actors. I see Donald Trump, he said, maybe he is a bloody reality TV star. I don't see Boris Johnson as any different. I don't see any of them as any different. They're just actors... reading from a script that, whether they know it or not, benefits the ruling elite's narrative so they can continue their agenda, which is us all being fucked, isn't it? Let's face it.
I think you've summed it up perfectly. For me, all of this drama we see now, Brexit, these trade talks, the North Korea meeting with Trump, all of that is bollocks. And it's just to keep you occupied in between financial crashes, which are manipulated by them, because at the end of every financial crash, they come and take more and more real wealth every time.
Absolutely, yeah. Goes, right? We're all distracted by it, and it's bloody good distraction, let's face it. What I'm always reminded by, and I've had to teach myself a lot of this, is it reminds me, even the best guys that are talking, it's like Plato's Allegory of the Cave. Wonderful, beautiful description of the shadows on the wall. Couldn't have put it better. Not to pick on the guest last week too much, but maybe the Dr. Chris fella. You know, a wonderful, eloquent, verbose description of the shadows on the wall. But at the same time, how can you be he's anti-banks, but pro-EU.
I know, yeah.
You know, it's like the mental gymnastics involved in that.
Yeah, but hang on a second. Hang on a second. I'm going to speak up for people like Chris, because we're all at different places on the road, aren't we? I mean, you are obviously somebody... who's a bit further up the road. Now, there are going to be people behind us. No, I'm not patronising you. I believe you are. And people, they take their own time in reaching these conclusions. And
definitely,
self-preservation as well. Some people know a little bit more than they let on, but they need to preserve that little bit of integrity so that they can go about their daily lives. We've got to keep that in mind as well. But I hear you loud and clear.
I agree, and I fully haven't been in security my whole life. I fully agree with watching your own six. But at the same time, it's kind of detrimental to what's going on. It almost legitimizes the process of government to analyze the bloody shadows, because then it looks legit, because these guys sound so intelligent, and they are. I'm not saying they're not.
Yeah.
They sound incredible. And to most people that don't quite know what's going on, they're going to stop shy of looking above the real calamity, what's going on before their eyes, because they think, oh yeah, they know the EU might be better or whatever. It's not.
Well, do you know what was interesting, Donnie? Do you know what was interesting about Chris last week? When I put it to Chris that the architects of the Nazi Party and Hitler's backers, those same people were the founding fathers of the European Union and sold that lie about no more war in Europe. Chris agreed with that. It was very interesting. Yeah, yeah. He agreed with it. He said, oh, you're right, Richie. But Chris, remember, has been in Iraq as well, and he saw Fallujah and all of that. So
hats off to him for the way he's done that, mate. But go on, yeah.
No, he looks at America, and he looks at neocon Zionists, and he sees them as being worse than what we see in Brussels. And I can understand that, you know, in a roundabout way.
When you go above it, though, Richie, if you go above, I know, that's where the power really lies. It's the same bunch of crooks.
We're at different steps. We're at different junctures on the journey, aren't we? You know, eventually, perhaps, yes, I've come to agree with you that ultimately it doesn't matter that
No, it doesn't matter, mate. Until we get to that level of conversation and ditch the shadows on the wall, it doesn't matter what calamity happens, whether it's Brexit or not. The people that are really in charge, I would imagine, Richie, they couldn't give a fat rat's cock.
Not at all.
We stay in or leave, because they're going to be in charge either way. And they order out chaos, order out of chaos. So they're just going to bring the order out of the chaos, irrespective. And whilst we're all shitting ourselves one way or another, or indifferent or whatever, they're just sat in the background being, couldn't give a shit, mate.
Couldn't give a damn. Listen, there are a couple of callers desperate to get in, so I want to take one. But before we do take one, first of all, thanks, Donnie from Brighton, for calling in. It's been really interesting, mate, having you on.
For a long time, mate, but I'm a bit of, you know, I like to listen on Podomatic or whatever, you know.
Oh, well, thanks, but I got a question. It's obviously, you know what question I'm going to ask? It's about ayahuasca. Tell me about that.
Oh, Jesus, I thought you said you had all the callers, mate.
I do, but
it takes way too long, way too long. Honest to God, all I will say is that I didn't know there was a difference between ego and self before I drank. I mean, other than that, it's everything they say. As long as you get the right setting, the right shaman, the curandero, it's all dependent on, like they say, setting, for those that don't know, is your mindset and the setting, obviously, where you are. So that's incredibly important. But it's definitely been an enormous tool of benefit to myself. And I don't know, without that, accumulation of many different things, not least of which David Icke, your show, all of the economic commentators, I don't know. It's all been part of it, mate. But ayahuasca is such a deep thing, it'd be hard as hell to go into that right now. But can I just push on you, lean on you for one thing? I'll try and be as quick as I can, Richie. But
go ahead, yeah.
It's very important for me. And maybe for people to ride along, if you're on a laptop or whatever, a channel called John Levi on YouTube, JONLEVI. It's about hidden history. Max Egan talked about it before, Richie. I'd just like to whet your appetite again, if possible.
Oh, brilliant, yeah. I don't know of this channel. I'm intrigued,
Loads
Donnie.
Of them, mate, but this is one I fire out because it's very easy to remember. But if you got his channel there, go to the Chicago World Fair of 1893. And I just want to whet your appetite without getting too deep. I'd love you to have Max back on because I'm sure he's all over this. But if you go to that World Fair, it's 1893, bear in mind. It's black and white photography, but don't let it be missed on you that it's high definition. It doesn't matter how far in you zoom, it's perfectly high def. Now, just equate that with the level of photography in our own country up until the Second World War, there isn't any. Now, that is kind of intriguing, wouldn't you say?
That is a bit mind-blowing, that. Yeah, 1893, you know, HD that, photography. John
well, the 200
Levi.
Buildings that they claim at the Chicago World Fair, they also claim that they were put up. This is whenever you want to know the bullshit, Wikipedia is the place to go, right? But what they basically say is these 200 Greco-Romano, you wouldn't believe the level of architecture unless you're looking at it now. The official narrative is they put them up temporarily for the World Fair, then they tore them all down. The same in the Paris around the turn of the century, and St. Louis, there's a number of them, but it screams of bullshit. If there's high def there, why is there not high def here? What, we didn't take any pictures of our royal family that now we can't wait to take pictures of? I would suggest that most of history has been absolutely rewritten, and it's total horse crap, mate. Also, in the 1700s, most of the world was known as Tartaria. Or Grand Tartary.
Got into that with Max.
Just happens to, it just
yeah,
happens to match all
that's
over the world.
Very,
mate,
very
so.
Interesting that. Yeah.
Yeah, obviously that's a deeper one to go into. I know you're a history buff, Richard. I feel like a stalker at the moment. But I know
not at all.
Low.
But you know, the history I've been taught and the history I've written about back in the day is all nonsense, of course. But
it's all bollocks, mate. All they've bollocks. All done it. I mean, these controllers have been literally, if you look at that photography, put two and two together, wonder what the hell went on. It puts into extreme doubt the old founding fathers bollocks from when Columbus struck. And it's just all, it looks like it's all a lie, mate. And what worries me more is what happened to the history of this country. Because you're the history guy, right? And we all, well, most of us know that the Windsors changed their surname from Saxe-Coburg-Gotha around the First World War or something because they were German. Now, where's all the footage? Where's the high-def photography of our country? Where is any of it? Something went on, I would suggest, and we don't know what the hell it is, but I would suggest it's this control system. It's the death cult. If you've got high-def photography there, where is it to here? And I'd love you to get old Max Egan on again, Bridgie, because he's usually all over this, ain't he? But, I mean, I don't want to sound off because I'm just a caller, but these are the guys that do all the research, ain't they?
Yeah, he's brilliant, Max. Love Max. Love having him on. It's about time he did come back. Donnie, listen, thanks for coming on. I'm going to try and squeeze in one or two more calls before
mate,
I...
Mate, thanks for having me, Richard.
It
thanks
was an honour,
mate. A real pleasure.
You've given me a lot of food for thought, Donnie. Thanks very much.
All in the gang, mate. Thank you.
Speak
bye-bye.
Again. Bye for now. That was Donnie in Brighton there. Yeah. Fascinating stuff. Was in the forces, came out, went back. As a private contractor into Iraq, talked about Halliburton, Dick Cheney, the things he saw there. Fascinating phone in this has been. Coming up for 15 minutes to the top of the hour. And there are about four or five calls coming in. I'm just going to hit the first random one and say, caller, welcome to the programme. It might be Natalie. Is it Natalie?
Yes, it is, mate. How are you?
Thank God for that.
really?
Yeah, because I saw you trying earlier on and you would have been next. And there are other people who've come later than you, so I'm glad I got you on. How are you? Great
no
to be
way.
Chatting with you.
I'm great, man. How are you?
Not too bad at all. Thanks for the 5G info earlier on, you nerd, you geek. But thanks anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I just wanted to give a little tiny bit more info because I had a couple of DMs and I'm not going to, you know, write everything out. I mean, it's very easy for people to find. But, I mean, if I can just say it quickly online, you know, on your...
Loads of time. Look, you've all the time you want. Go ahead, Natalie.
Cool. So if somebody really wants to go into their router, like, you know, physically, and turn off 5G for whatever reason, as I said before, it's not receiving 5G connection unless you have a certain router, but those models aren't even released even at this point.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, so I think people's concern is that it might be broadcasting 5G or 5 hertz, which is also fine. So what you can do, and I'm talking from a Windows perspective, I'm not a Mac girl, I refuse to be. What you can do is go to your start menu, the you know, the search box will come up, type C Charlie MD for mother, Delta, and then obviously click or press enter. Within that black box that will come up, type in ipconfig, ipapaconfig with a space and then /all. So ipconfig space /all. There you'll come up with a lot of, you know, numbers and names and things like this. What you're looking for is what's called your default gateway. That literally is, as it says on the tin, that's what's connecting your mobile, your laptop, your PlayStation, or, you know, sorry, your computer to your default gateway, which is your gateway to the world, which is your router. That number right there is your router's IP address. Now, what you need to do with that number is go to your computer or your laptop, open up a browser, whether it's Chrome, IE, or anything like this, and just type in that number. Most of the time, it's 162.198.0.10, etc. And it'll come up with something, you know, because I'm on Virgin, you know, someone might be on BT, and it'll kind of have that branding logo, and it'll ask you for a login. Now, 99 times out of 100, it'll be default. So for that, just Google it. So mine would have been, until I changed it, admin, admin, or admin as the username and 0000 as the password. Just really, I know it's really simple, really stupid, but that's all you need to do.
Are people right?
Have the access into it. Oh, sorry, darling.
No, go ahead, Natalie. Yeah, finish that. This is an important point. Finish that point. Yeah,
yeah, it's really almost there. So once you have those admin, you know, accesses to your router, once you're in, worst case scenario, just call up your ISP and ask for it. They can't deny you access to your own hardware that you've already paid for. And from then on, again, I hate to tell people this, just Google it. So, I mean, the menu systems are always really obvious, you know, what you want your settings to be, all of these kind of things. But somewhere along the line, you'll find something along the lines of band frequency or broadcast frequency. And as I said earlier, you will usually find 2.4 or 5 gigahertz or somewhere in between. You can just turn off the 5. You can just unclick, you know, that box. You can untick that box and then save the settings. And then your router will not broadcast at that frequency. But as I said before, the model of the routers, even on a business or an enterprise level, they are not receiving that yet. You can just look up online Cisco, the number one router, you know, supplier on the planet. They've not even released their models of routers that receive 5G just yet on a business level, never mind the mass market. So on a local level, I don't think people have anything to worry about. But if they do, I hope they've heard this and the instructions are there.
Well done. This is really good. So you can, using the instructions you've given us, you can basically deselect it so it won't receive, it won't broadcast 5G.
Yes.
Now, here's a question, Natalie.
So,
are people right to be nervous about 5G?
It depends who you listen to, but I would point towards yes. I mean, you said earlier that I work in IT. That's incorrect, sorry. I work in IT again.
IT, yeah.
I left that pub in Croydon, thank God. And I'm now back working in IT, and the company that I'm working for now, hopefully for a short time, they are looking to have 5G as a backup for sites when the main fiber link goes down. However, 4G, as we all know and love and whatever, is absolutely fine. They just want that so-called extra security of 5G because it can handle more data. It's not faster. It can just handle more. It depends who you listen to, but I mean, anyone outside of the mainstream, yeah, I think there's an issue, of course. You know, I mean, I wouldn't back this in any way, shape or form. I would be out there on the streets if I didn't have a 12-hour job and a three-hour commute and all the rest of it, you know.
So, Natalie, you would apply the so-called precautionary principle and you would look into this before you'd start using it, if you were given a choice, if you were put in charge.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the funny thing is, kind of, is that our network, you know, suppliers, not anyone direct, but the man in between, were quoting us for quite a lot of money just to change our router so it can receive that 5G when the model's available. And it's just crazy amounts of like money for a router model that's not even been invented or at least released yet, you know. And I don't think it's worth anyone's time, first of all, not worth the money and not worth the potential risk, you know, the whole 1 millimeter wave, we all hear about it. And I don't think it's necessary in any shape or form at all. 4G as a backup for a big site, for a big shop, you know, if a whole of Westfield went down, each of those little stores, you know, let's say they're on fiber or ADSL right now, all of their little routers they have, like locally, you know, within that shopping centre, would go down, and a lot of them that, you know, that have it right now, they would revert to 4G, and that's more than enough already.
Of course it is.
We don't need it.
You don't need it. We have it on our phones and tablets. I've just got a phone and a tablet. I don't use either of them very often. I just don't. I don't have any reason to be on the phone, and I only use the tablet preparing the silly YouTube thing in the morning, so I just take a few pictures from the newspapers and what have you. But 4G is fine. It's very, very quick. It's very, very efficient. And you've educated me there now, because when the Prime Minister Boris Johnson is talking about 5G, he talks about gigabit broadband. And that makes sense then to what you're saying. It's not about speed. It's about the capacity to hold more information. That's what it is, right? Transfer information. Yeah, that's what it means.
It kind of holds more information within the bandwidth instead of transferring it quicker. I don't know enough about it to explain it on like a layman's terms, but like that's the best way I can explain it. It doesn't transfer my thing to your thing quicker. It can transfer a lot more of my stuff to your stuff.
Doesn't mean
it's quicker. But like what I'm saying is that a whole site, like let's say a massive warehouse where you've got loads of like, you know, gigs and gigs and gigs per minute going out, or not per minute, but like let's say per hour or per half an hour, 4G is more than fine. It's more than capable. It always has been. Never had any issues with it. Even some places that I've, you know, supported on an IT level, 3G has been fine.
3D, you know? 3G is fine even now for people's needs.
Yeah.
Of course it is. We never had any problem when we used it. 3G, if you had to send an email, if you had to look at a video clip or listen to a bit of audio, there was no problem with it. None.
Exactly. I mean, I listen to your show, of course I do, and I have my commute, and you guys start at 5 o'clock. I'm listening to you solid, and I'm going through, like, you know, London, unfortunately, on fast trains. You know, sometimes it might cut out, but that's usually my end, not yours. You know, 4G, 3G even, is absolutely fine for data transfer. 5G is a whole different bucket. It really is.
Here's the question. Sorry, Natalie. Here's the question from Richard. Richard Mason. I've not heard from Richard for ages. How are you doing, Richard? He says, if 5G comes in via Ethernet, would that be harmful or less harmful?
It doesn't. It doesn't come through the internet. It's purely wireless.
It's not meant to be. It's not meant to be hardwired into your...
It simply does not. I mean, it's saying 4G or Wi-Fi comes through a cable. It doesn't. There's a difference between internet and broadband and fibre and ADSL, which is your basic copper BT lines, and 3G and 4G. And I hate telling people this because I'm the support, but just Google it, the difference, that's just the definitions. But 5G is not something that's going to go through a wire. It goes through the ether. Yeah. Sorry, I just realised what I said. But that's exactly what it does. It goes through the air. That's why they're cutting down all the trees and they're having issues with, you know, certain things in certain places like buildings and all the rest of it, because it doesn't go through that, as a lot of your guests have said previously. But it doesn't go through Ethernet. What goes through Ethernet is ADSL and fibre. Well, if it's a fibre cable, you know.
Here, do me a favour, will you, by the way? You don't have to do this. You've got enough bloody on your plate by the sounds of it with those crazy days that you have. But if you could type those instructions on a screen or on a piece of paper, take a snapshot of it and put the snapshot on Twitter. I'll retweet it, and so will Hayden, presumably. He might not be listening, okay, but he'll retweet it. Those instructions that you gave me, if that's okay, if you don't mind doing that. If you've got a few minutes.
I'll even stretch my backside to do it from a Mac perspective. I hate Mac, but I know people out there, I mean, they're much more user-friendly, so they're not going to check out these things. But yeah, I'll do that. Maybe not tonight, but maybe...
No, it doesn't have to be tonight, yeah. Of course not. No, but when you do, just drop me a message, drop me a PM on Twitter, and then I'll tweet it out as well. That was very important, Natalie. Thanks for that. You know I'm not patronising. I mean that. It's very important stuff, this.
No worries.
It's good to hear from somebody with your skills. Are you heading up here in a couple of weeks' time, or are you not?
Yes. I'm really hoping I can convince a certain someone in my life to let me come down for the Friday. But I'll definitely be there for the Saturday, if not.
Sounds like the plan. Well, I look forward to saying hello to you, meeting you face-to-face. I haven't known you for quite a long time now. Thanks, Natalie. Brilliant to hear from you today.
No worries, man. Take care, yeah?
You're brilliant. Look after yourself. Speak soon.
You too.
That's the brilliant Natalie Stacey. Natalie's an IT expert. She's also a musician. Is Natalie, a very good one as well, a guitar player, and did have a pub in Croydon, very switched on. Knows all this stuff as well. I don't have any time for any more calls, unfortunately. I'm really sorry. We had some unbelievable phone calls today. We really did. And I'm sorry for the people I didn't get to take on. But look, if you get me a message, I'll make sure that a week on Thursday, because I'm going to do these phone in shows every 2 weeks, right? So a week on Thursday, if you were trying to get on there in the second hour and you didn't get on, I'll get you on in the first hour next time you do the phone in. So send me a message, give me a load of abuse, call me all the names under the sun and say, Richie, I tried to get on in the second hour and I will get you on next time, and you can talk about whatever the bloody hell you want. The callers were fabulous today. They really were. Every one of them, amazing things to say, really important things to say, really important insights as well. John and Bolton and Paddy, Himanshi, Deepanshu, of course, right up to Donnie in Brighton, of course, and Natalie. And if I forgot somebody, I don't think I have forgotten anybody. Brilliant callers today. Thanks for that. Thanks for your company. I really appreciate it. Going to love you and leave you. I'll see you tomorrow at 9:30 on YouTube for the live stream nonsense. And I've got two brilliant women on the radio show tomorrow talking about two completely different things. So it's kind of ladies' night tomorrow, Tuesday, on the Richie Allen Show. Ladies' night. It's ladies' night tomorrow. That was your Richie Allen Show. I was Richie Allen. Thanks for listening. You look after yourselves and one another. We'll speak tomorrow on the live stream, YouTube, the papers and all of that old bollocks. Until tomorrow, bye.